Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Remember this moment from the very first episode of Comedy Central's Colbert Report back in 2005?
Anybody who knows me know that I'm no fan of dictionaries or reference books. They're elitist, constantly telling us what is or isn't true or what did or didn't happen. Who's Britannica to tell me the Panama Canal was finished in 1914? If I want to say it happened in 1941, that's my right. I don't trust books. They're all fact, no heart.
And thus entered the era of truthiness. But of course, Colbert's character on the show was fictional, but that sentiment taps into something Kurt Anderson says has been eating away at the core of America and American life for some 500 years, even older than the nation itself. We've slowly become untethered from reality, Anderson says, and he says that long history has inevitably led the United States to President Donald Trump. Kurt Anderson is a novelist, cultural critic, host of the public radio show Studio 360, and a best-selling author. His new book is Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, a 500-year history. And he joins us from the studios of WNYC in New York. Kurt Anderson, welcome to Radio Boston.
My pleasure to be here.
I'm going to stumble here a little bit because your indictment of America's relationship with the truth is truly all-encompassing. And at times it sort of gave me pause. But I wonder if you could actually just read a little bit from the book, a paragraph from early on page 11, where you say how much America has always had this strange relationship with truth.
I will. And I just want to say, first of all, that I wouldn't call it an indictment.
No?
And nor would I say it's eaten away. It's ultimately eaten away at our core, but it is at our core, is my point. It's always been here, and it's gotten out of control. But we'll talk about that. The passage you'd like me to read is, America was created by true believers and passionate dreamers, by hucksters and their suckers, which over the course of four centuries has made us susceptible to fantasy, as epitomized by everything from Salem hunting witches to Joseph Smith creating Mormonism, from P.T. Barnum to Henry David Thoreau to speaking in tongues, from Hollywood to Scientology to conspiracy theories, from Walt Disney to Billy Graham to Ronald Reagan to Oprah Winfrey to Donald Trump. In other words, mix epic individualism with extreme religion, mix show business with everything else, let all that steep and simmer for a few centuries, run it through the anything-goes 1960s and the Internet age, the result is the America we inhabit today, where reality and fantasy are weirdly and dangerously blurred and commingled.
Hmm. So why is that not an indictment of America?
Well, it wasn't always so bad. It worked for
right.
a while. All of these predilections and parts of the American character, this extreme individualism, this extreme anti-establishment feeling that sometimes became anti-intellectualism as well, embrace of every form of entertaining fiction, some of them in the form of entertainment, others not, the P.T. Barnums of the world, all this, Disneyland, all of it has, there has been, some of it's good, some of it's not so bad. All of it was contained. All of it was kept in a kind of dynamic balance by the reality-checking gatekeepers and establishments. And it worked okay, and we dreamed the impossible dream, and we thought big, and we did the impossible because the prudent countervailing forces and opinions were in control.
Yeah.
And then over the last, in my history, 50 years, that control diminished until we got to the point of the last, especially, 20 years or so, where preposterous beliefs of real consequence in society became mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. I mean, when people are just having nutty beliefs and practices on their own, I don't have a real problem with that.
The problem is that it can wash over on the rest of us now.
Correct.
But so I do want to spend some time going through your analysis of the 1960s in particular. But before we do that, just as in a nod to the deep history here that you write about, I mean, you talk about early in the book about John Winthrop, obviously a familiar figure here in the Boston area, you know, that Puritan man who gave us the vision of the city on the hill.
Yeah.
But you point out that a couple lines later in that same speech, you know, he goes off and warns about the end of days.
Well, no, the Puritans believed that the end time and the return of Jesus and the end of the world, Armageddon, was imminent, as well as believing that there were witches in their midst, which became a problem almost a century after they arrived in your Commonwealth. And created it. No, they were a nutty religious cult. They were who came here came to Massachusetts and Boston and created a theocracy. Then when somebody even nuttier than they in their midst, Anne Hutchinson, rose up and started her own kind of quasi-church where she thought she could tell who was going to heaven and she was godlier than them and she spoke directly to God. Well, that was too much for them and they banished her. So that was... Those were our founders, a small f, not the people who started the United States, who, of course, were Enlightenment people who rejected that kind of religion. So that's where we started.
Mm. You know, you go from that, and then again, you do this a very careful analysis of the long period of time between that and the 1960s. But I do think that your take on the 60s is obviously key here. And it's a take on that generation that I personally hadn't really thought about before, that was when we begin to see, in your mind, in your eyes, the decoupling or the legitimization of the decoupling of truth from our daily lives.
Well, and again, truth sounds metaphysical and existential. I'm really talking about the factual
fact,
shape of empirical reality.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, of course, and those of us older than you who were at least children in the 60s and experienced it and who are some in some general sense leftish think, oh, the 60s were great. The 60s were nothing but good. Civil rights, the environmental concern, the beginnings of feminism, gay rights. Oh, it was great. Anti-war. But what is lost in that and the sex, drugs, rock and roll fun parts of the 1960s, I think I found as I began thinking about this and how did this come to be, was exactly as you say, this rise of anti-science and even anti-reason and anti-rationality.
But what was going on in the 60s that drove that?
Well, it was part. Well, we had a war going on, certainly, that was all supposed to be the most rational thing ever accomplished by the then Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara, and rationalism got a bad name, and in general, in ways I sketch out but are familiar to most Americans, the kind of countercultural upsurge of like, hey, everything's up for grabs, nothing that we believe before is necessarily true, including both in the popular culture, but also in campuses and in the academy, this challenge of the Western reason and of empiricism. And, the magical ways of thinking and religious explanations for things and are just as valid as our science and our reason. That became a way that we were supposed to think. And we could no longer, it was uncool and impolitic to say no. We believe in science, for instance, and so that had some, a couple of generations to scale out and become part of the popular American understanding of things. At the same time, I mean, the 60s also was the time when Protestantism, when Christian Protestantism in America and kind of only in America in the developed world became as extreme as it had been, as it hadn't been since the 1600s, since Winthrop and, yeah. and the Puritans and Hutchinson.
So if, Kurt, if I could just jump in here, because there's something that I couldn't quite figure out about okay. this sort of fulcrum around the 1960s. And that, mm-hmm. To a certain degree, it made a lot of sense to me that, yes, the Vietnam War, the catastrophe of that, and then also the rise of this idea of relativism or grappling right. with the truth about, the damage that... that the powers that be had wrought around the world through colonialism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So all these things actually make sense to me. These were issues and ways of constructing our society that deserved pushback.
Sure.
But how did that tip over from that into what you call, like, very clearly, like the pandering to the vanity and self-righteousness of the new youth
right.
that led to, like, the rejection of science?
Well, there were two parts of the 60s, really. There was the strictly political side. The things you just described, let's be anti-war, let's be honest about American imperialism, whatever. The strictly political, more or less rational parts of the critique, the 60s critique. Then there was this whole other countercultural thing that was aligned with that, but was really about we are mystical. We can divine things. The shamans from wherever are as valid as our professors or our scientists. That whole thing was linked to the political 60s, but was a separate thing. And it's out of that second part, the hippie part, if you will, the countercultural part, as opposed to the new left part, the political part, that was where the headwaters of New Age and all the rest and essentially alternative facts was.
Yeah. You know, it makes me wonder. So then we have the 60s and 70s and 80s, and we get into a period of cable television and then the internet, which we could talk forever about in terms of how that amplified any theory or any idea of what constitutes fact. But I keep thinking back to, you know, the founding myth of the United States as a whole, right? This place where this inviolable myth that you can accomplish anything, you can do anything, anyone can be anyone.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, isn't where we find ourselves today somewhat inevitable? Like, as you write, we Americans yeah. feel newly entitled to believe absolutely anything.
And to treat, as... Daniel Patrick Moynihan famously said, people are entitled to their own opinions. They're not entitled to their own facts. Well, now they are. And now the people who work for the presidents come out and say, no, those are our alternative facts. So I don't know about inevitable. History is never inevitable. But looking back and year by year and decade by decade and century by century at these things I've looked at for the last few hundred years, we were inclined in this direction, and yes, the seeds were always there. So Donald Trump and alternative facts and post-truth and all these new startling things and this new startling situation didn't come out of 2015. It's been in our bloodstream,
yeah.
and like as in certain medical conditions. It suddenly kind of metastasized out of control in the last couple of decades.
Well, the fact that it has been in our bloodstream, I think that's the thing that I come away from your book feeling an even greater sense of alarm and concern. Because if it has been in our bloodstream for so long and just recently metastasized, doesn't that feel like it makes it that much harder to regain or reclaim the centrality of the notion that we should all adhere to a certain factual reality?
Yeah, it does. Now, again, if we want to carry the illness metaphor, people do come, things go into remission. And just because it's there doesn't mean we have to let it proceed uncontrolled. Now, you mentioned the internet, and I talk a lot about the effects of the internet on this phenomenon. That makes it hard. It does. It really makes it hard to put this genie back in the lamp
yeah.
or the toothpaste back in the tube. So I don't think we are just gonna, we're gonna get over this and John Kasich will become president and everything will be okay. See, because Donald Trump is not the cause. Donald Trump is a symptom. And if he hadn't been elected president, what I am describing in every respect except his election as president would still be true. So we are this thing. We are these people who have blurred fantasy and reality to an exceptional and in some cases dangerous degree. And so it's up to we reality-based few to put our stakes in the ground and when friends or children or family or whomever to say nutty, insupportable, untrue things, instead of saying, yeah, whatever, I think we have to say, no, that's not true, and stand up for it. I think we can, I am hopeful that we can prevent fantasy land from expanding its grip. Yeah. I don't think we can roll it back, but I think we can say, okay, we're at peak fantasy land. Let's where we live, what we do. If we're in the public sphere, so much better. We can do what we can in that realm. But let's not let this slide any further. Let's not, for instance, if we run a cable TV channel, put on more so-called documentaries about mermaids existing, as an example,
right. or the alien chasers or the paranormal shows pop up on my Netflix queue. We've just got a minute to go, Kurt, and I hate ending on a pessimistic note, but I have to read one line that you wrote. You say, "I really can't imagine for the first time in my life that America has permanently tipped into irreversible decline, heading deeper into fantasy land." Yeah. Again, you just said that perhaps we can dial it back a little bit, but is that really ultimately your long view here?
I don't end with a rousing three cheers. This is temporary. It may be, and. But I am a hopeful person. I am an optimist. I am an American. But as I say, it's hard for me, after looking at this history and seeing what our predilections are, to think like, it'll all be good.
Right.
Just give us a little time. It might be, but it's not going to happen without a struggle.
Well, you also, yes, you remind us all to continue to fight the good fight when it comes to clinging to reality. Kurt Anderson, his new book is Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, a 500-year history. He is the host of the fabulous public radio show, Studio 360. What a pleasure to speak with you, Kurt. Thanks so much.
Thank you, man.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.